Have you ever heard a color or, smelled a sound? If so, don't worry, you are not alone. Instead, you're part of a group I consider superpowered. You have synesthesia.
The term quite literally means a cross-mingling of the senses, exactly opposite to the more familiar word anesthesia, which means no sensation.
So for me, music and words kind of have colors and textures and forms, and it's like this weird abstract thing, but making music is like a really visual process for me.
Hi, I'm Matthias, and this is V1 & O, the show where celebrities get cerebral. On today's episode, Angel Olsen learns about synesthesia. A majority of humans have 5 senses. When I first wrote this, I wrote that we have 6 senses, but that is in fact not true. And it probably comes from that movie, The Sixth Sense, in which all I remember is Misha Barton plays a dead girl that traumatized my own childhood. The 5 senses that we do have are sight, touch, smell, taste, and hearing. But we don't all experience these senses in the same way. And what I mean by this is that the wiring in some people's brains allow one sense to trigger another. For example, people might hear colors or see sounds. These people are called synesthetes, which I have so much trouble saying, and the phenomenon is called synesthesia. Some people see letters of the alphabet or numbers in specific colors. Other people have perfect pitch, meaning that they can identify a musical note just by hearing it, because they are actually able to see the color of the note. One synesthete describes this as seeing fireworks when hearing music or everyday sounds, like the sound of water hitting a dish while washing it or something like that. Auditory tactile synesthesia is when sounds induce sensations in certain parts of the body, which I can only imagine is what's going on at a Harry Styles concert. Think about that one. Basically, synesthesia is really fucking crazy, especially if you don't have it, which I don't. It's really hard to wrap your head around. And you probably don't have it either, by the way. But you might. But how can you know if you are a synesthete? How might improving the science around synesthesia change our world and the way we experience it? And how have different cultures throughout history approached this recurring phenomenon? That's what Angel would like to know. Angel Olsen is a singer-songwriter from St. Louis, Missouri. Currently based in Asheville, North Carolina, she's preparing to go on tour with her 6th studio album, Big Time. About Big Time, Pitchfork writes that Olsen taps deeper into her country influences on a warm, self-assured album whose fluid narration unites love and grief, past and present, calling it her clearest and most radiant music. Months before the album's release, Olsen came out as queer to the world and her parents then passing away within weeks of each other. The album is thus an exploration of new love paired with devastating grief. This new body of work feels like a triumph for both Olsen and her fans, the latter of which will be able to see the singer on tour in North America and Europe. Our specialist on today's show is Carol Steen, an artist, writer, curator, and the founder of the American Synesthesia Association. Enjoy the show. Okay, so let me dive in here with a couple of questions for you. So I feel like in general, something that I really love about your music is the lyrics. I know a bit of the story of the latest album, and I wonder if when it comes to any of the lyrics, how easily it came this time around. Some of the subjects are so vulnerable and new to you, and I just wonder if it just kind of was flowing through you, or if this was as much of a struggle to write as, I don't know, it might have been.
You know, I think with this record, like, I think it's just reflecting like where I'm at in life, and I feel like I'm finally at a place where I can let go of like needing to adjust my style for anyone else other than for myself. I really feel like this record was for me, and I wrote the songs. I was trying to write without pretense. Of course, there's always a little bit of pretense involved with making any piece of art because you have to take yourself seriously, and that can be incredibly narcissistic at times and convoluted and weird. At the same time, I tried to just like write about things that I was really like simply dealing with and try to like not overthink it and not try to be overly poetic all the time about it, but to just like straight up talk about certain subjects in my songs. And, you know, I say that as though that was a plan, but it just ended up happening that way. I think the reason for it was that I just was really sad. And I was like, I'm just going to say it's really sad. And it's a simple, profound thing. And it doesn't have to be anything other than what it is. And, you know, I had a really terrible breakup where the person just completely disappeared from my life. And I wanted to write about that. I was like, you know, I'm a somewhat famous musician and somebody fucking ghosted me. And I want to write a song about it. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter who you are, how far you've come, or how far you think you've come, like people will disappoint you. And that's why there will always be more songs from me personally. I think I was just like, I want to find a way to like talk about this feeling other than feeling bad about myself. Just be like, you know what? I was ready to be serious. And that's a really cool thing that not everyone is available for themselves to do. And I want to, instead of feeling bad about being rejected or left behind or, you know, disappeared from, I want to talk about how strong I am and how scary that is for people and how they can't step up to the plate. And I want to write that in a song. So for me, I like had to find ways to like deal with my grief by saying things in a certain way. And then, you know, really the only song that was about my parents or my mother's death was This Is How It Works, which is, yeah, it was like most of the songs were written about heartbreak or like stuff I was dealing with personally and spiritually, like things I felt accountable. I needed to take accountability for politically as a musician and as a person with a platform, you know. I think I was feeling really shitty and I wanted to write stuff that like Go Home is like an anthem for me to be like more present with myself and just be real and notice like the truth when I see it and not chase after what is fashionable or what everyone is saying, or to like listen to things more and not just be the only person putting things out, but to listen. A lot of different themes going on that were directly related to like the pandemic and my personal life, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, like in a way there were so many heartbreaking things going on in a lot of different ways. It's not necessarily like an album you sit and cry to. There's a lot of like very optimistic feeling music, like sonically, even if maybe thematically it was a lot of really tough subjects. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, to me it feels like a calm, or it definitely has its moments of being sad, but I feel like calmer.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to play some calm music, you know, like I self-assured, I think, is what it feels like. Not to say that I am, but the record makes me seem that way, I think.
You seem it. You definitely seem it.
I mean, I wasn't sure what I was doing this morning, and so I don't have it together, but I'm trying.
Well, fake it till you make it. It seems like you have it very, very together. I wonder with the subject matter, like also whether, you know, it was somebody who ghosted you or stuff with your parents, like do you ever have any sort of filter in terms of, because like you said, you are a relatively famous musician and it's not like early days when nobody's really listening to stuff you're putting out. Like people are going to listen to what you put out. And so I wonder if you have a sort of filter of things that you say, I don't really want to share that publicly, or if it's really like the song comes and you put it out in the world and it is what it is.
Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes you just take that risk. I don't really get specific about like people's names, but yeah, I don't know, dude. If you fuck with me, I'm going to write about it. So don't fuck with me. You're just making me smarter. You're just making me smarter. Get out of the way. Move aside. Beautiful story that we had. But, you know, I also think, yeah, there is something to be said for, and I always say this, people always see them, they see themselves in something. They're not hearing it from your perspective ever. So there is a safety in that and in knowing that.
Yeah. I wanted to ask, we'll be talking about synesthesia. I'm wondering why that is a subject that was of interest to you and if you think that you have it to any degree.
You know, this has been interesting because we were talking about this in the band earlier, just like doing this sort of thing where we pick from a hat different subjects like wasp figs, fig wasps, and the journey that fig wasps make and like how figs pollinate, you know, that subject to like, or the map of how ants travel to like Northern America and shit like that. So like, this is just like one of those things that's sort of along the lines of the way that like the people around me and myself think, just like doing that kind of stuff where we're just like absurdly looking up random information. And I love like Stereolab and science is so cool. It's such a reminder of like great example of cohabitation. And like when we look at nature, we can really see ourselves. And so I'm a very visual person. Whenever I write music, I think in visuals. So I thought it would be an interesting subject to choose because I wouldn't say that I taste colors or I eat shapes.
Well, you do technically eat shapes, but I know what you mean.
But there's a book, it's a book on synesthesia, and I can't remember the name of the title. But anyway, I was just like, oh, this is a good topic because whenever I write music, I think visually. It's very visual.
Yeah.
Whenever I write, it's always very cinematic in my head, like super vivid. And I have a lot of dreams. And all my dreams are always extremely vivid. Like sometimes I'm like, I should get a Fitbit and see how much I'm actually sleeping because of the REM stuff.
Yeah. I think when you have really intense dreams, I think you're in really deep sleep. I'm pretty sure it means you're in a really deep sleep.
I think that's why I kind of wanted to choose that subject because I thought, oh, well, when I play music, I don't know if I see colors, but I see visuals.
V1NO is sponsored by Yuke's, the one-stop destination for art and fashion. I love Yuke's so much, and it's not just because they were our first ever sponsor for this podcast. They actually have an amazing collection online. Head to yukes.com and see for yourself. I mess up on this podcast all the time. Some of it you hear, the rest of it you don't. That's thanks to Citizens of Sound, a one-stop shop we use for all of our podcasting needs here at V1NO. Citizens will help you with conceptualization, branding, production, editing, and distribution. So whether you're an artist, an actor, or you just think you have a compelling story to tell, podcasting might be the right route for you, and Citizens of Sound are here to help. Head to their website, citizensofsound.com, for more information.
Carol, thank you so much for joining us. I'm wondering if, to start off, you can just give us a little bit of information about yourself and your own relationship with synesthesia, and we'll take it from there.
When I was 7 years old, I made a mistake and I told my best friend the color of the letter A, and she stopped talking to me. So I decided that silence was safer.
Wow.
And I didn't talk about it till I was 20. When you're that young and defenseless and it costs you your best friend, it's a question that stays with you. It's like, what is this thing? Am I the only one who has it? And it became like a life journey of following the breadcrumbs. I'd get a little hint here and there and there. So I wanted to find out, am I alone? Are there others? I wanted to find out as much information as I could. And then I wanted to make the information available to other people. So I started the American Synesthesia Association in 1995.
Oh, wow.
Wow, that's crazy.
I hate this friend of yours, by the way. I'll just throw that in.
She just didn't know. I mean, when I grew up, it was the age of everybody's the same. So if you were different, even if you were a genius, you were suspect.
Yeah.
So like all the other seven-year-olds, I wanted to be the same, but I wasn't.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're not.
Thank you. Are you a synesthetic?
I don't know. Well, that's why I wanted to talk about it. No, I think maybe not, but when I write music, I think of in visuals. Like whenever I play music, it's like turning on a movie. It's so cinematic in my mind. And, you know, I think that music is such a beautiful, not even about the act itself of making music, but the writing lyrics, just the fact that music can take up space and you can measure the amount of space a sound can take up, which is wild. And then it creates its own shape, you know? And I think that that's so cool. And I love talking and learning about stuff like this because I'm really into science and I just like, I love to find out stuff about our bodies and the universe that are super weird and profound and have always been there. So this is just one of those subjects to me that I'm like, okay, like how would you describe someone who has synesthesia?
I say that we experience the world in multimedia.
Yeah.
Like one of the common forms of synesthesia is colored letters and colored numbers. So for those people who have that form, which the scientists call color graphemes, We read in Technicolor.
Cool.
Does something like that ever get over? What, like, I see things just in one sensory way and I get overwhelmed by it, everything. Do you get overwhelmed easily, you know, more easily when you're reading something or hearing something because you are experiencing it on different levels?
That's a great question. If I had acquired synesthesia later in life, maybe. But this is how I see the world, and it's how I've always seen the world. So it's very hard for me to try to figure out what it would be like, except that I don't have colored letters for alphabets I don't recognize, like Greek or Cyrillic or Arabic or any of Japanese.
Yeah.
Until it's spoken. And then I start to get colors.
So it doesn't have to do with memory. It has to do with like attaching a mood almost to the thing.
Well, it's not memory. So it's like if I talk to you about sound and color, are you getting colors from sounds that you hear, or are you getting moving shapes, or are you getting it from the words?
HBO movie.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, isn't
it? Yeah, it feels like whenever I hear sound, I'm like, whenever anyone is talking to me that they don't, when people say they don't like music, I'm like, but music is so magical, and like you just hear it and a world just appears and can disappear. Like, you know, it's like a secondary universe of an experience. It inserts itself and completely changes your mood and can manipulate a situation and take over a space. And people are like, chill. Like, it's just me. I'll listen to one song over and over and over again. And it's like so visual for me. And it's always been that way. It's not colors, but I would say it's like when you smell a perfume and you can remember where you were at when you were like 23, because that perfume, someone was wearing it. It's kind of like that. It's like this catalog of emotions and moods and visions. Yeah. And future visions. I don't know if it's the same as thinking in Technicolor or seeing shapes and then colors, or seeing letters and then colors.
Is it something, I guess this is more for Kara, like, is it something that you feel like you still have to occasionally prove to people or convince people of? Is this considered like a scientific fact, or are there still people that are like, I don't see how that could be possible? Because if you read about why it's happening in the brain, it actually makes perfect sense scientifically, because I'm such a scientist. But I just wonder if there's still any like doubt surrounding it, because I can also see stubborn old people being like, I don't experience the world that way. I can't imagine how anyone else does.
Yeah.
Great, great question. In Africa, well, let me preface that. When we started to study synesthesia, we were studying people in rich countries, meaning that they had telecommunications, they had computers, they had internet. And so the communication was terrific. It was rich, and lots of people were hooking up and connecting with each other and sharing information. We're trying to reach people in the third world countries. And there's an organization in Africa that has just formed. And one of the problems that they're running into is that people regard synesthesia as witchcraft.
Mm.
Because they don't have the science. They don't have the information. So it's going to take them a little bit longer. But I remember hearing early on about a tribe in Peru. I think it's the Shipibo, but I may be mispronouncing that. And these indigenous people would weave the color of the scent of the flower. They would weave the color of the scent of the flower. It takes a minute to wrap your head around that. But if that isn't synesthesia, I don't know what it is. So I'm thinking that people who are the healers in indigenous populations might very well have mixed senses. Whether they're willing to talk about it or not, that's something else.
Yeah. Your research is, I'm just assuming, strictly scientific. Or are you the possibilities of the spiritual context of it?
We know so little about synesthesia, absolutely so little. I'm not a scientist, but I am a researcher. Yeah. I'm an artist. And my artwork in the beginning was trying very hard to show people what I would see. because words failed. You can show them a picture and they'll get an idea. You try to describe it and it's like the classic five people who are blind and one elephant. And one's got the tail and is describing it. And one's got the body and describing it. And one's got the tusks. So they're all describing the elephant, but they're only describing what they're touching. So it's fragmented. So I started to paint what the different triggers were for me, what sound looked like, what letters looked like. Now I paint just kind of the world view of what I see, what wandering through a painting would look like, which is the same as wandering through my internal landscape.
Wow.
So that's what I do. That's a different form. There are many different ways that people get visions. Synesthesia is one. The ones that you see in the background are hypnagogic. And that happened about 2013. One day, I was trying to fall asleep, and I'd shut my eyes, and all these visions would come, and they were perfectly formed, unlike synesthesia, which is kind of like watching that movie you describe, Angel.
Yeah.
And these were fully formed, and then I had to learn a lot about Photoshop in order to do them. Yeah. So they were digital. Photoshop's not easy, guys.
I have another question, which I'll preface with just like a very quick story. But when I was younger, there was one time where I did acid. It was the only time, but maybe I'll try it again sometime. But anyway, so my friends and I were 18. We'd never done anything that was like hallucinogenic before. And what we were so fascinated by, I remember I was touching the wall repeatedly because I was seeing lightning bolts shooting out of my fingers. And I didn't tell anybody that that's what I was seeing. And my friend next to me said, oh my God, every time you touch the wall, lightning bolts shoot out of your fingers.
Wow.
So we were hallucinating the same thing. And I wonder with synesthesia, is it normal? Like, do you hear a note and a bunch of people who have it will be like, yeah, that's red. And you all tend to agree and you're seeing it and hearing it in the same way? Or is it really different for everybody and there's no agreed upon like A major is in this color, or, you know, what have you?
We don't agree at all. As a matter of fact, what happens is oftentimes when the American Synesthesia Association puts on conferences, our last one was at Harvard, synesthetes will come. And the synesthetes are like so many of us, isolated, not having a lot of information, and in particular, never having the opportunity to meet someone else who can do what they can do. So we begin simply, and I might ask, it's my favorite game, by the way, I might ask, and what color is your letter? And I'll pick one, L. What color is L? And they will, in great detail, tell me precisely the color of L, at which point I will grin, laugh and tell them how wrong they are. And it takes them a minute to catch on that this is a game and that we don't agree. But the story behind that was about 300 years ago, scientists, just a handful, knew about synesthesia. And the problem was that they didn't know how to study it. They thought that if one person on hearing the sound of a trumpet said, well, the trumpet's red, that all the other synesthetes would agree, oh, the trumpet, that sound is red, for sure. But that's not what happened. And the scientist said, we can't study this. You know, there's no agreement. And it wasn't until the 80s and 90s with the use of first PET scans and later MRI scans of the brain that they were able to find it. And what they did was a really elegant experiment. They took a man who was synesthetic, who had colored sound, and they put earphones on him and they played music. And then they scanned his brain. And they noticed in the brain scans that there was more blood flow activity to different parts of the brain, unexpected parts of the brains. So you've got audio and you've got visual areas of the brain lighting up. And they're going, okay, this is real. But they needed a comparison. So they took someone who didn't have synesthesia, put earphones on that person, played music, scanned their brain, and nothing happened. Just the audio part of the brain. And that was the door that had just opened a crack, and then it just was flung wide open. And researchers all over the world said, okay, let's see if we can replicate it. And they did. So now we know that synesthesia is absolutely real. But people who don't know about synesthesia who don't perhaps even have the word, they might think one of two things. These are classic. And they might think, oh, I better not talk about this because people are going to think I'm nuts. Or they'll say, I'm not going to talk about this. Everybody does this, like having a belly button. There's nothing unusual to talk about here. So they remain silent. And many people discover synesthesia with kind of a jolt. It's like somebody says something and they say, wait a minute, doesn't everybody do this? Or they may make the mistake that I made at 7 and tell a friend, except then there was no information. Now there's a lot of information. And so their friend might say, you know, I just heard about that. Maybe you have synesthesia. So the door is opening and lots of people are coming in and finding out about it. If the statistics are correct that one person in 23 has one or more forms of synesthesia, and we've documented about 70 so far, that translates to about, if you think of the world population, maybe 350 million people have synesthesia. That's a lot.
I listened to like Radiolab a lot, and there was an episode once about how some people are born with a fourth color cone.
Tetrachromates.
Yeah, yes. And I wonder if that at all is related to synesthesia or having it, or if there's any research going on about that.
The study of synesthesia truly is in its infancy, and we don't know the boundaries. We don't know if you have synesthesia, what else do you have? What don't you have? So scientists are busy pursuing that. Whether tetrachromades are connected to synesthesia, I don't know, but I know that only women can be tetrachromates, which for people who don't know what that is, it means that when you see color, normal vision, three, I think it's cones in your eye, tetrachromates have four, so their perception of color is much more sensitive than most of us tetrachromates. Yeah.
I'd never heard of that before. It's really interesting.
Oh, there's so much we don't know about people. And it's wonderful what we're finding out.
Well, so much of it is like anecdotal, right? So it's really until people start saying, hey, I experienced this thing, it's like impossible for us to know.
Yeah.
Well, they're coming up with tests.
Yeah. That's good. That's good.
What's being researched right now that you're really excited about in synesthesia? And where should I start with beginning to research it and finding out if I have it?
Great question. There is an online test that's coming out of Japan, but it's sponsored by the University of Sussex in England. And the website, it can't test all the different forms, but it does do colored sounds and it does do colored letters. So it's synesthete.ircn.jp/home.
Okay.
synesthete.ircn.jp.
We'll email this link.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can go there. And if it's up and running, cool. You can take the tests and find out that way. What am I interested in research? I'm interested in how research is affecting education. If you have a synesthete in the classroom, and let's say, because we've got whiteboards now, and you can write in different colors, if you put the wrong color of a number on the board, the synesthete has to go through a translation process. They have to convert it first into their color in order to follow along. So I'm interested in terms of synesthesia affecting education. Very much.
Yeah, and opening it up to people who are, how do you say it, synesthetes?
Synesthetes,
yeah,
right.
For them to learn in more creative ways.
And I'm also interested in how people use their synesthesia. So there are multiple things about synesthesia I'm interested in. David Eagleman, who's at Stanford right now, who originally started with these online tests, he and a number of other researchers are interested in how you can take one sense and modify it so that it affects another sense. For example, somebody who's blind can't see, they're using synesthesia to make sound visible, like echolocation,
right,
so that you can retrain the brain in a way And there are people who walk around with these devices on, and they can navigate mazes. Kind of extraordinary. So what can science do if you're missing a sense to use synesthesia to add to it?
That's really cool. I would love to learn more about that.
Yeah, same.
Me too.
Well, thank you so much for doing this. I'm going to check out your art. It looks so beautiful.
Thank you. It sounds to me like you do have synesthesia because it's often described not only as color, but space, shape, and movement. My question to you is, do you know what triggers it? Is it words? Is it pitch? Is it timbre? And I don't expect an answer right now because that's a hard question. But think about it.
Yeah, I wonder. I feel like the easiest answer is music. But yeah, I don't know. I'm a very visual person. When I was a kid, I would watch a movie and I could photogenically, like, it would just like take up my whole day. But I think that was just, I always thought that was just being creative and being obsessive. But I would make everyone reenact the scenes, you know, and I would know exactly like who should, you know, that was sort of how I was as a kid. And then I made music. And I feel like that's like when those sorts of things got triggered for me. But yeah, I'll think on that because I'm not sure.
It's not easy. And don't expect that you're going to know the answer in a day. This could take a long time. Or it might happen. I'd like to say that there's a whole group of composers and musicians who have it. And I don't know if you know these people, but I'll just quickly go through a list that I made for you. So Franz Liszt, Olivier Messiaen, Sibelius, Duke Ellington, Leonard Bernstein, Gregory Ligeti, Itzhak Perlman, Amy Beach, Stevie Wonder, Billy Joel, Pharrell Williams, Mary J. Blige, Lord, Quincy Jones, Laura Nero, Lady Gaga, Billie Eilish, and her brother Phineas O'Connor. So you are in really great company.
Yeah.
But don't expect agreement on colors. It's not going to happen. But you can have a great fight. It's like being 5 years old again. It's party time.
Yeah, if you're craving a good fight, then those are your people.
Just tell them that B flat is green. Watch out.
Angel Olsen's Big Time is available to stream now. V1NO is produced by Ryan, Killian Krause, and myself. Our editors are the people at Citizens of Sound. I'm Matthias. See you next time.